Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad is a new book by Austin Kleon, the artist whose books you may have read, whose videos you may have seen online, whose TED Talks you may have heard or even witnessed. He's going to be at the Harold Washington Library this evening at 6 o'clock, and he's in our studio right now. Austin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. I'm great.
Is that it? No, was it TEDx talk? What was it?
TEDx talk, yeah, in Kansas City,
I believe.
Oh, you know, it's local. It's a local TED talk, so.
What do you do for a living?
I write books, and I give talks.
But they're kind of, I don't know, how would you describe your slice of the market? What kind of books do you write?
Oh, I write picture books for all ages is kind of how I like to I like to describe them. I'm a writer who draws, and so my books are, I like to think that they're fun. You know, they have a lot of pictures in them.
You wrote Steal Like an Artist, Show Your Work, and Steal Like an Artist Journal. Well, are those all separate books? Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's the one, Newspaper Blackout?
Newspaper Blackout's the first one. That's a book of poetry. And what I do is I take the New York Times, I take an article from the New York Times, I make a couple of, I make a boxes around words that pop out at me, and I turn those words into little funny phrases or sayings, and then I black out everything. I don't need it. Sort of looks like if the CIA did haiku. Or the Mueller report, if you've seen that lately.
I was just going to say what it is what if randomly one of the redacted Mueller report pages was insightful or
poetic
or philosophical? So what would an example be where you black out words top to bottom, and now I'm skipping over here, down there, because it's all blacked out, but there's a word there. What would one of your poems be that you found hidden in an article?
Well, I've been married for about 12 years, so I like to write a lot of poems about marriage. There's one called What is Marriage? And the poem says, marriage is two people in love standing in the same bathroom.
Now, that sentence did not exist in that article, but those words in that order did.
Yes.
And if you blacked out everything in between. So what's the process then? Do you think, I want to find something about the intimacy of marriage? Or how do you get from A to B?
Well, it depends on how many markers you huff before you do it. But no, it's really funny. It's almost like a Ouija board or something. You know, it's like it's interesting. If I go to the page with a preconceived notion, and this is true of all kinds of writing, if I go to the page with a preconceived notion, I won't get something as good as if I just look at that big block of text and let stuff pop out at me. And then I don't want to be too highfalutin about it, but it's sort of like Michelangelo looking at the block of marble, you know, trying to figure out what's inside.
That is very highfalutin.
It's very highfalutin.
I want you to take that back. Michelangelo somewhere is going, wait, I chiseled marble.
Right. This kid takes a marker to the newspaper.
Are you kidding me? But I would imagine there's a word or phrase that seems evocative somehow, and you go, okay, I can work with that.
Yes, and then I call that an anchor word. Like, you zoom in on that word, and then you start looking. It's like one of those word search puzzles you used to do in the back of the car on a road trip, and then you move back and forth and up and down, and you try to find words that you can connect to that anchor word, and pretty soon you have something.
So give me another example of a bit of philosophy or poetry that you found embedded in a New York Times article.
So this one's called Overheard on the Titanic, and it says, I mean, yes, we're sinking, but the music is exceptional.
How fortunate for you that that article was written, that your eyes found it, that you found that poetry embedded in there. Could I do this? Could anybody do this?
Oh, elementary school kids do this all across the nation. Teachers have kind of like really gotten into blackout poetry, and they write to me and they send me wonderful pictures online, and they always tell me the same thing, which is the quote unquote worst students are the best at blackout poetry. I it warmed my heart the other week. A teacher said, man, you should see a couple of teenage boys light up when they get to make poems and read them to each other. It's crazy.
I wonder if that begets then original poetry that isn't blackout.
I would hope so. I would hope that blackout poetry is like a gateway drug, you know, to other poetry.
Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad is the sort of book that would spring from a mind like yours. But what's this about then?
This is a plain old book. This is a book about how to sustain a creative passion or career over time, especially in the face of distracting or disheartening times. This is the first book I wrote that because I actually need to read it. The other books sort of happened by different kinds of happenstance, but this was a book that I desperately needed to read. I felt like a couple of years ago, like a lot of my creative colleagues, I sort of became very distracted by the climate of the country and social media and the sort of state of the world. And then add to that, I sort of been doing creative work for like a decade and it wasn't getting any easier. And I mistakenly thought it was going to get easier over time. So those two things together sort of made me want to go out and seek wisdom from other artists and my own practice. And I came up with this list of 10 things that'll sort of keep you going in good times or bad.
Is this a prescription for artists or Americans?
I think all types of people who want to find like a passion or work that's meaningful. People just trying to do something meaningful with their life. I don't think it's just for creative people or people who think they're creative.
Some of the chapter headlines, and there are 10 of them, as you just described, are build a bliss station, make gifts, the ordinary plus extra attention equals extraordinary. Slay the art monsters. When in doubt, tidy up. Demons hate fresh air. Plant your garden. What are you doing here?
I think I'm trying to give people a list of things to sort of get back on what other path they might have fallen off of. You know, this is sort of a corrective book.
Yeah, but what if I'm an accountant or a mechanic? I mean, suppose I do something, I'm a farmer.
Yeah.
What do you say, what does this have to do with that, right?
I really feel like we have this mistaken notion that just because, you know, creative isn't attached to your job title, that you're not supposed to have some sort of interior creative life, you know, like farmers, mechanics, the ones I know are some of the most creative people I meet.
You're a farmer or mechanic, I know I just implied that and I don't mean to, but I wonder how it translates.
Yeah.
I can see if you're an artist or a talk show host, yeah, this is integral to your job, but maybe you could be a dull farmer and still be effective.
I think that creativity is a tool that we all possess, that we all have access to, basically. And I think that some of us, it's like working out. You know, we work out more and we get bigger muscles. But I think creativity is this thing that we all can access, and you can use it to reorganize your living room. You can paint the Sistine Chapel with it, or you can build a weapon of mass destruction. You know,
so give me an example of an application of one of the chapters in a life.
Yeah. My favorite chapter is probably the most, you know, plainest advice, which is to take a walk. The Demons Hate Fresh Air is the name of the chapter, and it refers to something the film director Ingmar Bergman said to his daughter. He said, in the morning, get up and take a walk, because the demons hate fresh air. We're all sort of existing in this moment now where if you're on your phone, the world seems not worth living in or worth saving. You know, it feels like a garbage fire. And then you take a walk, you know, you go out on the street, and yeah, there's some problems, but there's also skies and trees and your neighbors, and life is more beautiful when you take a walk. And you get all sorts of ideas when you're out on walks. And so I think everyone should put down their phones and take a walk.
I was waiting for the L yesterday, and there was a big crowd because there was some violence down the line. The police were there. The trains were running slow. So the platform I was on was packed. And I was looking at hundreds of people all facing the same direction, the train tracks. And at one point, every single person in my line of sight was looking at their feet.
Had
their phone in their hand, and they were looking down. And I thought, I've never seen a more isolated group of people standing shoulder to shoulder.
So close.
And I don't know what they were supposed to do. Like, in my perfect world, they're not doing that, and they're engaging in spontaneous conversation. And I don't know that they did that in the 1950s either. But it did look like a very lonely group of people.
One of my favorite artists who has Chicago roots, she doesn't live here now, but she used to, I think she used to do something for the Reader. Her name's Linda Berry. And she talks about how the phone has given us so much, but it's also taken away so much from us in terms of, you know, we used to get bored every once in a while. And boredom is the great, it's the great thing that leads to creativity. It's when you get really bored, then you start coming up with really interesting stuff to do. And so I think as much of as the phone has given us, I think it's also taken a lot away. And so I'm a big advocate of airplane mode isn't just for the airplane. I think airplane mode can be a way of life. You switch your phone into airplane mode, and all of a sudden you got this freedom because nobody can get to you.
In our studio is Austin Kleon. His latest book is Keep Going. One of the chapters is a headline, is a line from A Groundhog Day. And I want to play the clip and then ask you what you're talking about when we come back. But this is the scene from which you draw in your book. Go ahead, Elif, play that.
I was in the Virgin Islands once. I met a girl. We ate lobster, drank pina coladas. At sunset, we made love like sea otters. That was a pretty good day. Why couldn't I get that day?
I think you as a glass is half empty kind of guy, am I right?
What would you do if you were stuck in one place and every day was exactly the same and nothing that you did mattered?
Bill Murray, Groundhog Day. Okay, so you draw on that to say what after this. In our studio, Austin Kleon. Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad is his latest book. He's talking about it tonight at the Harold Washington Library. Can folks still see you at 6 o'clock tonight? Is it still possible to get tickets?
Oh, yeah. Come on down.
So we played the Bill Murray clip from Groundhog Day, where he, and in fact, the chapter in your book, I believe is it the first or second chapter?
It's the first chapter, and it's titled Every Day is Groundhog Day.
So what are you talking about here?
I think we all feel like sometimes our life is out of our control and life becomes very repetitive. You know, like we're just sort of like whenever I go out to my studio, I walk out to the garage behind my house where I work and I go in, I close the door and I sit down and I look at a blank page and I think to myself, didn't I just do this yesterday? You know, all lives have a certain amount of repetition to them. But I think what Phil discovers, which is so wonderful, is that even though his life is ultimately out of his control, like he's repeating the same day over and over, he discovers that each day he gets is a gift, and it's the meaning of his life is how he fills those days that he gets. And I think that's the point that we all sort of have to come to, is that even though we might feel stuck in these loops, stuck in these sort of, creative ruts every once in a while, it's really how we fill our days that provides the meaning for our life. And I think all great creative artists sort of have this sort of daily practice in which they do sort of go back to a blank page every day, and they do sort of do the same thing every day, but that's an opportunity for them to get the good stuff.
But I'm also still, again, thinking about people whose jobs or lives aren't inherently creative. They work on an assembly line at a factory or something like that. And I'm glad to hear you saying what I think is, even if that's the case, what's more important is how do you fill your life with things that make you happy? That's a creative process. How do you find or maintain that?
Exactly. How do you find and maintain some sort of creativity in your everyday life when you are away from the line, you know, or when you're in your personal life, or when you're at home, or even when you're on your lunch break, you know, because I think lunch breaks are this wonderful opportunity to sort of disengage and do something creative, whether it's just take a walk or spend a little time with a notebook or even listening to music.
What's a piece of advice you have that people come back to you time and again for and say, wow, what a game changer? Thank you for that.
Oh, I think for this book, one that people keep bringing up over and over is forget the noun, do the verb. Now, what does that mean? Well, we all know people who want to be writers, but that writing thing, it's a little tricky, right? And I think that, you know, if you forget about the job title you want and you think about the work to be done, so forget about being a novelist, just worry about writing. I think that will take you someplace further and far more interesting than obsessing about this noun that you want to be. Because if you focus on the verb, you know, if you just write, maybe you discover that you're a poet, not a novelist. Maybe you discover a talent for screenwriting.
Or maybe you discover that you're never going to make any money doing either, but don't you enjoy writing or imagining a screenplay and putting it to paper?
You sure? Yeah. Like maybe you discover that, wow, I really do love filling that journal in the morning before I go off to work. It really juices me up.
I was just on vacation and I was trying to every day journal what I did that day.
Cool.
Including what I wore. And my wife said, why are you putting that down? Or somebody asked that. And I said, well, because when I think back on trips I've taken, I packed up clothes, I ate food, I did these things, and I want to try and remember as much of the experience as I can. Your clothes are a very personal part of your day. So I put down, I had on my coral pants with gray shoes and a print shirt. And every time I try to do something like that, I discover that it's difficult for me to finish even a week's worth of it. That it is, it's a task.
Yeah.
And it's easier to not do the task. I so enjoy having done it. But I close with this. Just give me a thought on the discipline it requires to do these things that will make your life more fulfilled.
I just think of it like doing push-ups, you know? Like, we all kind of know that, like, well, if you want to get ripped, like, you got to do your push-ups every day, you know? And it's the same for creative work. Like, if you don't show up every day, you're not going to have the muscles to do it, and you're not going to find your great works.
You should do your show tonight without your shirt on. Are you ripped?
No.
But you are here.
There's a reason why I write.
The book is ripped. It's called Keep Going. It's a little 5-inch by 6-inch blue paperback, if you will, with pretty laminated pages and his art of sorts in there. It's by Austin Kleon. It's subtitled 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad. It's the right book at the right time, Austin. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to Chicago.